Good evening. The question was asked, how do we view learning philosophy and other wisdoms other than Torah? So this question is addressed in many sources, obviously. This question was discussed over the different ages. There were times when the youth were attracted to philosophy and it led them astray from Torah. There were different periods in Jewish history when our approach was different, and there were also differences between different countries. But we're going to work with Shulchan Aruch. We're just going to see what it says in Shulchan Aruch and commentaries. And bear in mind that there's been a lot written on this over the generations, and obviously there were different approaches throughout the time. So let's begin. Just so we have perspective, about two centuries before the Shulchan Aruch, there was a ban. Some countries made a ban that no Jews should learn philosophy. The rabbis made a ban. Some countries made a ban, I think it was the Rashba, that you have to be, 25 years old. You have to pass a certain age before you start studying philosophy. Because when the youth would study philosophy, they'd find it so enticing that there were many, many people who would leave Torah and just go with philosophy.
Wait, can I just make a caveat for the question? Can we also, if you're, I don't know if this is something you've discussed already, but there are a lot of different types of philosophy, even within Song Sing.
Correct. So we're going to try to define our terms. Okay. So we're reading in the Shulchan Aruch, Siman Reish Mem Vav, 246, the fourth paragraph. Chayav Adam Leshalesh Limudo. A person is obligated to divide his learning into thirds. Shlish b'Torah shebichtav. A third, learning the written Torah. That's the 24 books. Shlish in Mishnah. That's what we call Torah Shebaal Peh. And that's the explanation of the written text. And when we say a third in Mishnah, so we're talking about Torah Shebaal Peh. And Shlish b'Talmud. And a third in what we call Talmud, Gemara, that a person tries to figure out where what the bottom line is from all the Torah he's learned. He should figure out what makes things similar to one another, what makes things different. A person is going to try to figure out through this learning what is at the core of observance of Torah and Mitzvot. What's permissible, what's prohibited. So let's say the Shulchan Aruch gives us an example. A person works for 3 hours a day. So he has 9 hours left to learn Torah. Okay, three he'll learn Torah Shebichtav, he'll learn Tanakh, three Torah Shebaal Peh, and three he'll learn what we call Gemara, derivations. When is this so? This is when you're a beginner. But after a person has mastered Tanakh and Mishnah, so then he's going to spend most of his time learning Talmud. He'll have set times for reviewing his Tanakh and Mishnah, but most of his times will be for learning Talmud. Says the Rama, and some say that the Talmud Bavli is a mixture of all of Tanakh and Mishnah, and when you learn Talmud Bavli, you're going to end up knowing your Tanakh and Mishnah. So you don't have to spend a third of your day doing Tanakh and a third of your day doing Mishnah. So far, part one. Now, we're going to go to part two, which addresses your question. Says the Rama, Ve'ein na'adam lilmod ki mikra mishnah v'gemara v'aposkim v'nimshachim achayim. Person should spend his time learning Tanakh, Mishnah, Talmud, and then the halachic authorities. And that's how he will acquire his portion in this world and the world to come. Avalo, we're reading the Rama. Avalo shal chokhmot. Don't go reading other wisdoms. Wait, I shouldn't read anything. I shouldn't know science. I shouldn't know math. What does that mean? Continues the Rama. Umikol makom mutal mod ba'kai b'shal chokhmot. But nonetheless, you are allowed to learn in passing other things. That's not what we're discussing here. On condition that you're not reading the books that contradict the values of the Torah. Our sages say this is what's called walking through the orchard, the paradise, and that's when you try to understand the wisdoms of the sciences. So that's something you do on the side. It's not a main thing. He's not talking about your livelihood. He's not talking about math and stuff like that. He's talking about the sciences, what you might call... Let's see. What are we up to? Just a second. Says the Shach, don't spend your time reading other books of wisdom. Kegon Sifra Philosophia. For example, philosophy. V'tchuna. V'chokhmat HaKabbalah. V'chaytze ben. He puts them all together. Philosophy, math, physics, and Kabbalah. He puts all three together. Now, he says if you read the Ramah, then it sounds like all the sciences are included in Pardes. The Pardes, walking in the orchard, what we ordinarily think is Kabbalah, it encompasses everything. It encompasses every type of science and philosophy. And that's not so. Because the Rambam writes that Pardes is the understanding of creation, the understanding of angels. It's not all sciences included in Pardes. Now, when do you study that? That you study after you've mastered Tanakh and Mishnah and Gemara, then you go and study the other stuff. Just a second. Next, he quotes like this. He says, Kabbalah you shouldn't learn till you know Shas, etc. Others want to say you don't learn Kabbalah till you're 40 years old. And a person has to purify himself, clean himself. And usually people try to learn Kabbalah too early, and they die too young. People who try to learn Kabbalah too early. But, okay. So that's part one. Now you'll say, wait a second. But what about science? What about philosophy? So the Gemara asks, how... just a second. Oh, here we go. So, there is a long piece in the Gro over here, which we won't go into. And the Gra is very strong. He says, this is not what it said. This is not what the Gemara means. Pardes is Kabbalistic things. It has nothing to do with what the Rama thought it was. But this is how Maimonides understood it. Maimonides understood that philosophy and science is different, like the Shach says, different parts of philosophy and science. These are the secrets of the Torah. The Gra says no. Kabbalah is something completely different. It's not what the Rama wrote.
It's a very interesting argument.
Yeah, fascinating argument. Now we go over to your question. Okay, wait. So then what's my bottom line? So the bottom line divides into a bunch of different questions. Let's start with the base question. Am I supposed to spend every free minute learning Torah? Right, that's our basic question. So the answer is whoever could, should. Meaning if you could be doing a mitzvah, you do a mitzvah. Learning Torah is the biggest mitzvah. So you have the time, you should be learning Torah. So our baseline is, I should be learning Torah. If I have time, I'm supposed to learn. Are there other mitzvot? Yeah, I'm supposed to perform other mitzvot. I daven in the morning. I do chesed. I build the sukkah. I go and buy matzah. There are many mitzvot I do. Okay, I need some time to make a livelihood. Fine, so I do all that too. But wait, after I've made my livelihood, etc., I have some time left. Am I supposed to spend it all learning, or can I start reading the science journals and brushing up on my knowledge of the sciences? So the answer is, whenever you can learn, you should be learning. That's the most major mitzvah you can do, and it'll help you, and it'll help your family, and it'll help the world, if you can do it. But what if I need a break? So then it says in the laws of Shabbos, not here. He discusses reading history books. He discusses looking the Ramah, looking through Astrolab, which in their day that was a telescope. So you see, they spend their times understanding science. The point of the Ramah here is when we discuss the obligation to learn Torah, so we have to realize that whenever I could be learning Torah, I should be learning Torah. It's the most major mitzvah I can do. Ah, you'll tell me if I'm not learning Torah, I need a break. Should I take the break, fizzling my brain on the computer or doing something productive, getting an education? Might as well get an education. If it'll help you with your parnasa, then for sure you should get an education. And sometimes guys want to stay longer in the machon. So there are two types of guys. There are guys who haven't scratched the surface. They really need to get basic knowledge in Judaism. So then I say, if you leave now, I don't know if you won't lose everything. You have to grow. And whatever cost it is, you'll have to deal with it. But it's a need. And then you have guys who have, they're already learning Gemara, and they have a basic knowledge of the holidays, and they know Tanakh, and they know Mishnah, and they're in the process of building themselves, but they're in a process. They've reached a certain basic level. So then I say, as long as you could learn, it's good. But you also have to factor the question, sometimes by pushing off, going out to work, you end up being incapable of finding a good job. Sometimes a person waits till the only job he can get is cleaning floors and earning 40 shekel an hour. So if by leaving a little bit earlier, you can get the education and get the better job, so sometimes that's smarter, because then you'll make more per hour, and then you'll be able to learn more Torah. But you need to be at a place where it makes sense. You need to have brought yourself to a place where you won't lose everything by leaving yeshiva. Sometimes a student, if he leaves yeshiva, he's going to lose everything. Unfortunately, I'm saying you need to reach a certain level of knowledge and observance that you're at a place where you can be productive as an observant member of society. It's not such an obvious answer. That's where it's a good idea to consult with your rabbeim. But I'm saying that's... So that's step one. So yes, most people need to work to make their living, and in order to get a good job, most people need some kind of education, and that's good. That's what it says. Even on Shabbos, you're allowed to find someone for your son to apprentice by. It says in the laws of Shabbos, one of the things, Chazal didn't want you to talk business on Shabbos, but if we're talking about finding someone for your son to apprentice by, you're allowed to discuss it on Shabbos. Why? Because that's a mitzvah. One of your obligations as a parent is to get your son a trade. It could be whatever job it is, but our job is to be able to make a living. So here we see the concept that learning, when we talk about learning sciences, so hold on. If it's information that I need in order to make a livelihood, so that's a mitzvah. So basic math is probably a mitzvah. Basic computers, that's also that I could be a productive member of society. That's important. So far we're all together?
Would that mean that it's okay to network on Shabbos? In terms of discuss what people's businesses are to make sure that you can find a trade?
Let's deal with his question first and your question second.
Unless it's going to miss the train of thought. It is a tangent.
So let's hold off on it. Okay? He writes them down. He gets back to me. Okay.
Yeah, no.
We had no point.
Oh, otherwise I put him in my phone. I got like a...
It's good.
So, as far as our children, that's a good question. What we found is that kids need a break anyways. Kids can't learn straight. And so when they take a break, sometimes it's very entertaining for them to do science games, to read encyclopedias, You know, we bought, that's something we invest a lot of money in the external, informal education, so that the kids can play games and learn scientific things. My kids are talking to me about the components of the blood. I don't know, you know. They're talking to me, red blood vessels, white blood vessels, which makes you stop bleeding as you're bleeding, and I'm like, I have no idea, but they have this book that's in cartoon form that shows them how the blood works in our body. So they're learning all kinds of things in science from these beautiful, they're really nice encyclopedias that they put out today for the observant community, written very, very nicely. So they end up knowing a lot. So why not? I'm saying kids can't learn all day. So if for them it's fun, for them it's entertainment, so why not? Why not entertain them in things that are educational? I buy for my kids atlases, so they read stories and history books, and so in their free time, when they're taking a break, they don't realize they're getting a secular education. I'm saying it's there's nothing wrong with knowledge. On the contrary, knowledge is wonderful. The idea is, when you could be learning Torah, then why take the time to do other things? But as a break, why not? And as a basis for getting a good livelihood, for sure, a person has to get knowledge. The question is, what age do you work on that? So that's already a practical question. When is it necessary? Some will argue if you don't teach the kids math at a young age, they'll have a harder time later. I don't know. Most yeshivas do teach the kids basic math at a young age. But I can tell you that one of the games I play with my kids is I'll shoot out math riddles to make them think. So that's, we talk riddles in Torah, I talk riddles also in math. I'm saying it's, we do both. Coming back to here. So now we go on, we've expanded to secular education, and now we zoom in on philosophy. So when it comes to philosophy, the danger with philosophy is on a few levels. Number one, as our sages wrote about Sefarim Chitzonim, that there are books that are external to Torah, and they have underlying themes that you don't notice as you're reading them, that affect a person, that cause us to start adopting certain perspectives that are antithetical to Torah, and we don't even notice it. This is common. This is common in books that missionaries write. This is common in books that are anti-Jewish. They work.
Every book has a message to it.
Right, but some have underlying themes that are antithetical to Torah. For example, if we wrote a book, whatever I don't understand doesn't exist. But I wouldn't say it that way. I would just keep presenting that as a base philosophy for other ideas. You'd walk away from that and say, okay, wait, I don't understand how there was the splitting of the sea, so I don't even know if it happened. Meaning there are many ways to get a person to start looking and saying, maybe that's not true. Okay, the reason I thought it was true is not because I understood it. The reason I thought it was true is because I have a tradition and I trust my tradition and I have millions of witnesses, whatever, for whatever reason. But it wasn't because of that. But when you go into a certain line of reasoning, you end up walking away with that line of reasoning and you don't even realize how it affected you. And then a person can find themselves coming back to Torah and feeling it's all foreign. The Gemara's example is in the book Ben Sira. So the Gemara says there are some smart things there and some dumb things there. The Gemara brings an example, Zaldekan, a man who has a beard that splits in two directions. So it says in that book, be wary of him because his beard looks like this because he's always plotting. So when people plot, they're pulling at their beard and that's why his beard grows that way. So he's a plotter. So the Gemara says, you see, that's a dangerous book to read. You'll say, what's dangerous? So the Gemara says, or Rashi over there says, that you didn't even realize as you read that, you asked yourself, do I buy it or don't I buy it? But the underlying message is, depending on what type of beard you're born with, that will define whether you're a cunning person or not. That's not true. We have a lot of free will. But you didn't even notice that as you read it. You just asked yourself, do I buy into it or not? But there's another underlying theme as you read the book. One of the underlying themes of the book Ben Sira is that we don't have a lot of free will. Well, that's against the Torah. In the Torah we say, you have free will, you have to choose. We might be predisposed to certain things, but we have free will. So in philosophy, the danger is multiple in that sense. That a person can read it and really find himself very, very far astray without even realizing how he got there. So the philosophy of the Torah is not so simple to wrap our heads around. There are books that are written on what philosophies is the Torah teaching us. If it's Rav Hirsch, if it's the Akedat Yitzchak, if it's the Rambam, if it's the Abarbanel, if it's the Ralbag. We have many works that explain to us what approach the Torah is giving us to life, and call it the metaphysics. The danger with the works of philosophy is that a person won't notice as he's being led to all kinds of attitudes that later on he won't even be able to retrace a step. It's not like a person's going to say, this is how I got here. He'll suddenly find himself looking at the world through certain eyes where he won't realize, how did I get here? And then things will look foreign to him. And unfortunately, we've seen people go this route. Meaning, not one or two.
You're saying in the Machon or throughout history?
No, I mean in the years, last decade or two, students who said, no, I just want to study A or B or C. And then they end up so confused. And then when you try to explain things to them, there's like they're already looking at the world through different eyes. And then you try to explain to them, you know, your system is not going to get you. There are other ways of looking at the world. It's not just a question of proof. It's like questions about God. So you know my answer. Depends on what flavor God is. Is he chocolate or vanilla? What does flavor have to do with God? What does your logic have to do with God? Meaning, we think we can take our logic and say, how does Hashem fit into this? It's not, you're talking about a totally different system. It's not about that. But there are people who try to approach everything through that. Okay, by definition, Hashem is not within that. It's not.